stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview with singer, actor, Jagar Helwig, who is one of the ensemble players currently appearing in the hilarious version of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which is running at the Manatee Players Theater. In fact, the last show to be running in that theater before they open their brand new venue. In this interview, you can hear the voice, which makes Jagar Helwig the perfect choice for Milus Gloriosus, the part he plays in Forum. Stay tuned. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Is about being the person you really are and living the life you were meant to live. Of course, every week I talk about this. Every week I talk about the fact that it is my belief that most of us are living out what I call our cover story. This is like the story that a spy concocts. You know, a spy has a cover story. You know, if you've seen Argo, the movie Argo, which is, of course, up for an Academy Award, the way those captives escape from their dreadful captivity is by use of a series of cover stories. And you can see it's perfect, actually, for what I'm talking about. If they slip up in their cover story, if they don't remember it, if they don't get it right, they are in danger, serious danger. Well, I believe that we, too, are demonstrating, expressing, presenting cover stories, and that we're doing it for the same reason. We're doing it because if we did not present this cover story, if we presented who we really are, we believe that we would be in danger. Now, the difference between us and the spies or the folks in Arco or the real people who had to get out of Iran is that they know the cover story that they're presenting isn't the truth. We don't. We have created this story in our childhoods because we believe that if we present who we really are, there'll be some consequence, an unpleasant consequence. We'll be teased, embarrassed, neglected, punished, abused. Something will happen that we don't like. And so we decide that whatever this quality is that is going to bring down this unpleasant consequence, we have to do away with it. There's something wrong with it, and therefore something wrong with us, and so we have to do away with it. Well, we are so clever, we are so flexible, that quite young we manage to suppress impulses about who we are. We suppress our exuberance. We suppress our assertiveness. We suppress our intelligence. Some people suppress their health. Now, I don't mean to suggest everybody suppresses everything. Whatever it is that your family of origin, your school, your religious affiliation, your culture told you was not good and it was going to bring down some unpleasant consequence, that's the thing that you figure out how to suppress. A minute ago I was talking about the fact that some people suppress their health. I have seen this. People who, as parents, care for them when they're sick, care about them, take care of them, pay attention to them, and who are not particularly interested in them otherwise, learn very quickly that what this parent wants is somebody to take care of, and a healthy kid is not somebody that they can take care of. And we are capable of creating illnesses, even things like headaches and stomach aches. I have a lot to say about this, and I don't have a lot of time to say it in this show, because, as I said in the opening, I want to play the interview with Jagar, whose life really demonstrates that it is possible to know who you are and hold on to that throughout a lot of reversals, a lot of obstacles. If you've been listening, you know that I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because although it is difficult to make your living or your life with an art in this culture, people who do it have held on to something extremely significant about who they are. And when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be coming from who you are. And I hope that if you have had to suppress some aspect of yourself, some quality, some way of being, that while you're listening both to me talk about it and to them essentially embody it, that you might ask yourself, what might I have hidden that I could use? Because that, of course, is the problem. It's no big deal if you deny it something that's not important or not useful, but unfortunately, that's not what we usually do. We usually deny things we could really use. So I probably need to say now, because this is a long interview and I may not have another opportunity to say it at the end of the show, I did write a book about this. The concept of cover story is in that book. You can find the book. You can find the workbook and the audiobook. You can find podcasts for all of the shows, including the one I'm doing right at this moment. You can find out about psychotherapy on the go. I am a psychotherapist, and I do all of my practice on the phone these days. So if you're interested in psychotherapy on the telephone, you can learn about that on the website, which is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynnshow.com. I'm going to play Jagar's interview. I hope that you will, if you live in or around Bradenton or Sarasota, or you're coming to visit, that you will find a way to get out to the Manatee Players and see their production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. It's wonderful, and Jagar is amazing in it. So I'm going to play the interview with him. I'm going to play a cut from his CD, which is just called Jagar. And if there's time, I'm going to play the song he does in the show, because it's wonderful. It's not Jagar singing it, but it's wonderful. So before I run out of time, here is Jagar Helwig. I am here with Jagar Helwig in my kitchen because he was kind enough to come down and talk to me. And currently, Jagar is getting ready to be in a funny thing happened on the way to the forum at Manatee Players.
Correct.
Good. Mm-hmm. And I haven't explained, so I will now. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, mm-hmm. and I only ask one question.
Okay.
And that is, since the arts to which you seem to have given your life mm-hmm. are music, theater, mm-hmm. singing, how do you define yourself?
I'm going to say entertainer, but it has a weird connotation for some people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not juggling on a street corner, but I don't like to limit myself and say that I just do one specific thing, only because I've always been one of those people that have kind of tried to branch out in the arts. But mm-hmm. if I had to pick one and say jack of all trades, master of one, mm-hmm. it would be singer, because I've been singing since I'm 5 years old, standing on grandma's table, you know, doing a little show.
Well, and that's the question.
Right.
I should say that I saw Jagar in Annie, and I can speak for his amazing skill at singing.
Well, thank you.
So, no, you're welcome. So, and I am really looking forward to seeing Forum, which I've never seen before, so
yeah,
I'm
it's a good show. It's fun.
Yes.
It's a fun show.
Yeah. Okay, so the question I ask mm-hmm. is,
okay,
how did it start? Not, you know, when did you get your first job, mm-hmm. but when was the first moment that you thought, ooh, singing, I like that, I'd like to do that?
I can think back as far back as early, early childhood. I remember being the kind of child that was always a little bit different than a lot of other children. So I recognized at a very early age that I like to use the word unique,
mm-hmm.
because it didn't really fit into a particular mold, and probably 3 or 4 years old, I remember running into the closet and just making up dialogue and having imaginary friends walking to school, and I'd be talking to the trees and I'd pretend there was a parrot in the tree and I would do the parrot's voice and we'd have a conversation to school.
Yeah.
I knew that I had this ability that was a little bit different, and I always...
Did anyone comment on this?
Well, my parents kind of picked up on it. I mean, we used to go to grandma's on Sunday and she'd
right.
make the gravy, you know, and we'd sit around and they'd say, do a little, you know, whatever, and I'd get up and I'd just, you know, a fake soft shoe. I mean, I'm 4 years old.
Yeah, right.
I'm doing a little fake soft shoe and singing a little song. My mother told me, I don't really remember, she told me I was on the Buffalo Bob show
uh-huh.
as a child singing. I don't remember what
you,
age.
Did she tell you how old you were? Oh, you
young.
Don't remember how old.
I was
right,
young.
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
She said
right.
I was young.
Okay, so...
So they must have recognized it, too.
Right,
yeah.
And so there was performance,
mm-hmm.
really, from the beginning.
Yeah.
From the beginning, you were inhabiting a character, aware of an audience.
True.
Right?
And aware that I wasn't afraid.
Ah.
You know, I knew people always talked about, I can't get up and be a public speaker. I'm so afraid. And I always used to think, I love that. I mean, my favorite type of performing is cabaret or very close interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a one-man show in Atlantic City. But really what it was, I was walking around sort of performing to people.
In people's face, literally.
Yeah, and so I felt comfortable with that and always have. So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to use this to my advantage. You know.
Well, what's interesting to me is that from the beginning, mm-hmm. you had this impulse to do this stuff.
True.
And mm-hmm. you got reinforcement for it. They didn't say, oh,
that's
stop
true.
That, or,
right.
you know.
Right, and my parents
they
were
said
not,
more.
They weren't artists. I mean, my father was a construction worker, my mother was a housewife, you know, but, it, you know, my father was the brusque sort of tough guy, yet when I remember him taking me to a music store when I was 12 to buy me a guitar because he knew that I had an interest in it, and the funny part of that story is I begged, I want a guitar. It was the thing to do in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I thought I could impress
people. 12?
Yeah, you know. So I'm sitting there and I'm playing. I took a few lessons and I realized I was smart enough to know that I wasn't really good at it. So I'm strumming one day and I'm thinking, it's missing something. So I started singing along to what I was playing and mm-hmm. I realized that I sang better than I played the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some type of an epiphany at that point saying, Maybe you need to, maybe that's your instrument.
Your voice.
Which is still a battle with some people to this day when they ask me, oh, you went to school and you have a degree, and what was your instrument? And you say voice, and then a blank stare goes over their face.
Yes.
Like, they don't think that there's a skill involved in that.
Yes, yes, it's true. It's true. But okay, let's back up because I want to talk more about that. But So we have you at 3 or 4 performing for the family and talking to the trees, essentially, right?
That's exactly
right. Right. And really, in an important way, I think, developing the idea of who you are and what you had to offer really very, very young.
Sure.
Okay, so now by the time you're 12, mm-hmm. you're already thinking in terms of performance. That's what that guitar thing is about. You weren't doing that to learn how to play so much as you were learning how you were going to do that to get attention.
And
I
was going, to family functions or, friends would come over or I would take the guitar into school for show and tell.
Right. So you were performing already by that time.
Yes, I was.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And your family clearly...
They loved it.
They loved it, right.
I had a cousin or something who was a singer in New York. I never met her, but, that was, you're like your cousin, that kind of thing. Everybody has a cousin.
Yeah, right. Well, everybody doesn't. But not everybody has a family that says, ooh, this is lovely, we really like this.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
They were very supportive. I have to say, they were not artistic in any way.
Right.
But they were supportive.
So even better, then,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't really understand the urge to do this. A parent who mm-hmm. either has or wanted to can really feel what that's like. But for your parents who just did it because they loved you,
True. A family of 4 children, and I would say that my other siblings appreciate music and mm-hmm. art, but not necessarily to the degree that I was involved in.
And they didn't mind you doing it?
No, they didn't seem to. I mean, they were always, let's go see him in the show or whatever.
Okay, all right. So now 12, mm-hmm. you begin to figure out mm-hmm. that the biggest strength you have is in the singing.
True.
Okay, so is there...
And the voice.
And the voice.
The voice in general.
The voice, yeah, you have a wonderful...
Thank
obviously,
you, appreciate
you have a wonderful...
That,
you're listening, he has a wonderful voice. Right. So...
I realized that the voice was sort of my... ticket.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, were there opportunities in school to use this?
Did them all. I did the choir. I realized a bunch of my buddies and I decided we were going to join the choir so we could meet girls.
A bunch of your buddies wanted to join choir?
Well, the reason was we wanted to meet the girls.
I know, but this isn't that common.
No, no, it's not. And
let's join the choir to meet
that,
the girls?
I didn't really have the... I was... athletic, but not athletic to the degree that I would ever want to. I mean, I went through the typical, phase of, maybe I should be a football player, or maybe I should do that. I tried out for the football team. I'm hurtling a little bit forward. I remember in high school, I worked out with the football team at 17, and I made the team, and the day that I made the team, I quit and joined the band. And my mother always used to scratch her head and say, do you remember when you made the football team and you quit the same day? And I said, I just wanted to prove that I could do it.
Ah, I wanted to prove that I could do it.
Yeah, just...
So there's in that, that's in there too.
I think it has to be if you're a performer. Right?
Well, that may be true. Otherwise, you can't survive.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's back up.
So
you and your buddies joined the...
Right.
I still can't get over this.
I know.
You joined the choir. Did you meet girls?
We did, but then I really realized that I was doing it. Because I enjoyed the singing part of it. And at that point in time, I guess my voice was starting to change a little bit. I think I recognized that I had this deep sort of voice, probably younger than I can remember, because I do remember being in fourth grade. And, in those days, we didn't have music teachers. The regular teacher did, had a piano and that kind of thing. So everybody stood up. We were singing this song, and she banged the piano and said, stop. And she went to each child and pointed and said, you sing, you sing, you sing. And when she got to me, she said, it's you. Stop singing.
What?
Now, I was 10. Well, now, thinking back over the years, I think it was because my voice was changing already. And she couldn't figure out why I sounded differently than the other 10-year-olds.
She was an idiot.
She was an idiot. Instead of saying, let's nurture this, it was, you're not singing like everybody else.
Wow.
So, I mean, I sort of had that little bit of time where I was a little bit afraid, but then I kind of got over it because being involved in the choirs and just knowing that you found your niche, you found that you kind of fit in with a certain group of people. I think everybody needs a audience or a group.
Yeah.
So it's not much different being a football player out on the field on Friday night with throngs of people waving and being on a stage.
Right, so were you on a stage? And you, so it was the choir.
Choir, and then we had, you know, get together with your friends and you're going to have a band. You know how that is.
So,
the days of the 60s with the electric guitar.
Right,
the garage band thing. And then we had a group. It was a folk group, sort of like a Crosby, Stills, and Nash with really tight harmonies and those kind of things. We wound up deciding we were going to try out for the Battle of the Bands. Well, Battle of the Bands is typically rock bands. Well,
right.
Come to find it, we won.
Ah.
So that was, this is going to be the thing now. So I realize, you know, this is the way. So we just continued and.
Did you have lessons? Did you study?
I had no singing or voice lessons. I took some lessons on the piano. I was very feeble at it. I tried the guitar. In high school, I was thinking that I wanted to get a degree in music and actually learn more about.
Yeah, you're singing harmony, but this is all by ear,
yeah,
right?
It was all, yeah. So I needed to kind of know a little bit more. So I sort of got on that track of staying with the band, and our band went to the Orange Bowl in Florida and the Rose Bowl, and I picked up a trombone, and I was kind of feeble at it, but I was good enough, I guess, to be in the band. So I realized I had some innate ability, although I didn't really know what I was doing. I took a few piano lessons. So by the time I was in high school, I thought, well, I need to really kind of connect, and I went and auditioned at a college in New Jersey, Kane College. At that time it was called Newark State College. They were all state colleges back in the day. And I wanted to be a music major.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in, and one of the things they do, of course, is they test you to see what ability you have, and they ask you to bring a song and sing it. Well, of course, I sang some pop song, Carpenters or whatever, you know, whatever it was back in the day. And they said, well, you realize, you know, we train people classically. Because if you learn to sing correctly, you'll have your voice for your
forever.
Life, and you'll no matter what you sing, you'll be singing it the right way. And I was like an open book.
You said fine.
Whatever you do, and that's how it kind of started. And you know, I started taking, you know, I was singing art songs and.
So this is college.
College, yeah.
They accepted you,
mm-hmm.
and you were a music major.
I was a music major, and within the first month, I saw a posting. The theater was doing 1776.
Mm.
And I wanted to do that show badly, and I got the part of Jefferson. I had to wear a red wig, and, you know, that's where I met my ex-wife in the show.
Yeah.
And it was a...
It's a great part.
It's a great show, and I had done... We did a little, like, an excerpt of it in high school. I did the Dickinson part, so I had this taste for
to
that
the
show.
Right, to the
yes,
right.
Yes, ever to the right,
right,
you know.
Right.
And I was like, yes, this is fun. And it was just... It kind of opened me up to the thought of... Not only just the singing part of it, but the acting, the theater connection.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was not shy, and I was able to be different characters. And
right. You had that from the parrot variety, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I was doing voices. I could do. I was the man of a thousand voices in high school. The kids would say, "You can do that." You know, whatever crazy stuff. So I was a theater minor in college.
Mm-hmm.
So we took theater courses, and it was nice because it actually did more for me in the way of the technical side of theater.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was theater design and, you know, those kinds of things. But the classical singing training was phenomenal. We had adjunct professors from New York that would come in. I studied with Louise Natale, who sang with the Robert Shaw Chorale. And, you know, I mean, it was just a really new beginning for me. An awakening.
Yeah, it was, I can't think of what the word I want to say, like a legitimizing
mm-hmm.
of this thing that mm-hmm. you'd been...
Sure, and because people ask me all the time, I've had people over the years say, can you teach me to sing?
Mm-hmm.
And my response is always, I can, because if you can speak, you can sing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're asking me, can I teach you to sing like me? No, because we're all unique, distinct individuals.
Right. And you came in with this.
Right. And so it's like anything else. It's like someone saying, me going to a basketball player and saying, teach me to play like you.
Right.
You can't do that.
No. Right.
So I'm not saying that there's not an ability that can be learned and can be nurtured and developed, but I think you have to have the raw material.
Yeah, there are vocal cords.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Right.
It's true.
And they're not all the same. Right. And they create different sounds.
Although I do have to say, you know, having been doing this for so many years, I do really respect people who work at their craft
mm-hmm.
and build upon it.
Okay, so now we have you in college.
Right.
And it seems to me that what college did for you
mm-hmm.
was it took another step towards legitimizing the idea, this really is a career, this
mm-hmm.
I can expand into acting, this may really be something I can do with my life.
Yes, but I realized at the same time, luckily, that it's a very, very volatile business and difficult business.
Mm-hmm.
And the old phrase of 1,000 broken hearts for every light on Broadway, I knew that I needed to have the backup.
Mm-hmm.
So my degree was in music education.
Ah, very smart.
Okay. Knowing full well that this could manifest, the big change that happened for me was as I was about to make the decision about what I was going to do with my life, this individual entered my life. I was only 18. She was 19. The rest, they say, is history. I had to make a choice between career and
life.
Life. Mm-hmm. So we were married young. Children came along. Some things happened over the course of that, and I was basically the parent of the children. So I had to actually put my career on hold.
So
to the degree that it never probably got to the point that it might have.
If you'd been able to.
If I had been able to do it. I don't have any regrets because I love my children. I love being a parent and a father, and so I would never change that. And I am understanding that everything happens because it's supposed to happen. And I'm very grateful and thankful to have had that opportunity.
Okay, so are you saying that you used the music education?
Yes, I was. I became a music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually the only one in my music class to get a job that year as a public school teacher. I have an interesting story. I was hired to be a teacher in a district in central New Jersey. A few years into it, my ex-wife also got hired in the same district. Go figure, with the odds of that. We actually started, we were both music teachers. One of the students that we knew in the that we had in our classes became someone famous, John Bon Jovi, because
mm-hmm.
he was in Sayreville. Right. And we had him over to our house, and he was 16.
Right.
Hey, I'm going to be a star one day. We were like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know. But the rest is history, as they say, because
he is.
Never know.
Right, that's right.
You know, but we helped him with his singing and that kind of stuff, you know, gave him some tips, and she gave him some lessons, and John would come over and hang out, and, you know, we were just like, well, I mean, he's got some potential, you know, but you never know what'll happen.
No, because you don't know what makes
you don't know what'll
you know
make
what causes
yeah.
the thing to take off.
No, and then I just, you know, so now the little kids were there, and, you know, I was still, at this point, I'm not going to abandon my family and go try an audition on Broadway.
Right.
So I needed to say, well, I don't want to lose all of this ability that I have, and this, I always think of it as, I always say I'm an artist first. So the choices that I make are artistic choices, not egotistic choices. So I can go, you know, a year without doing something significant performing-wise
mm-hmm.
because it's just not something that I like, I think I'll be good at, or it doesn't do it for me.
Right.
So I'm not, I guess I have a healthy enough ego that I'm a performer,
right.
otherwise
right.
I don't think you can be, but I'm not, I don't have that big of an ego that I have to constantly be on stage all the time.
Right, to prove it.
To prove it.
Right.
Yeah. So that makes me a little bit different than a lot of people that I'm surrounded by all the time. Because I'm always amazed that you're in the middle of a performance for a show and they're running to audition for another one already.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
They're not really in it.
Yeah, I'm just not like that. Yeah.
Okay, so you taught apparently
for a long time. And I always had a, like I said, I'm very eclectic, so I realized that there were some other interests that I had, and that was during the time when PCs first came out, and I was fiddling, and this is kind of fun, you know, and it just kind of got to the point where I decided I'm going to take a couple of classes in computers, and it just kind of mushroomed from there to the point where I actually got, I had enough credits to be certified as a computer teacher.
Mm.
So I started teaching that, because I was bored.
Right.
And had an opportunity. I just was reading the New York Times one day, and they had a you know, those were the days where they didn't have Craigslist, so you had to actually read a newspaper for a job. And they were looking for a person with an education background that could teach computers corporate-wise.
Ooh.
It was a company based out of Princeton. I just put something together. Well, wouldn't you know, they called me. So I had to make the decision. I had 10 years of teaching, had a vested pension, and I was going to leave that career at the age of 29 and become a corporate trainer.
Wow.
Which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to travel around the country teaching this wonderful product and just meeting a bunch of people. And again, it helped me because it was almost like being on stage.
I was just going to say it's a different performance.
Yes,
right.
Because you had to qualify for each of these courses that you took, and you're always meeting new people. And, you know, there you were at the front of the classroom, and there's all of these adults, and it kept me...
Oh, yeah. You have to keep their interest.
Yeah, it was good. And then I just basically did that for a while, and it kind of turned into, they asked me to become part of the consulting group of the company, and I wound up being a computer consultant. And at that point, I left and went on my own and incorporated as a consultant, a mm-hmm. private consultant. So I actually was working for some great companies like Merrill Lynch, IBM. I worked at the World Trade Center in New York. It was just this phenomenal thing that just kind of happened. But in the back of my mind was, well, I don't want to give up the performance.
Yeah, when am I going to get back on stage?
So I tried to. It sounds kind of weird, but maybe to you it doesn't. Mm-hmm. That I looked at everything that I did from an artistic eye.
So it doesn't sound
weird.
Well,
how did you learn? You know, how did you learn the computer language? And I was like, well, I learned languages to sing opera, so the computer language was just another language. You know, Italian, German, French, and COBOL. You know? So it just kind of worked for me that way, and that's how that happened. And I wound up just doing that. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but basically, I had this epiphany in 2000, and I went back to teaching music.
Really?
I was a music teacher in Atlantic City, New Jersey. That was an urban district. Mm-hmm. They needed people like me mm-hmm. to just kind of nurture the kids. And it was challenging, but probably the most rewarding thing I ever did, ever.
Wow. How long did you do it?
I did it for about another 8 years. And then I was offered an early out, which I took.
So that was when?
2013, so it was probably 2010.
So how did you get here? And how did you get back up on stage?
I never was off stage, but I told you I did the stint in Atlantic City. I was with an opera company. And
oh, no, you didn't tell me anything.
Okay, I sort of jumped ahead. My ex-wife and I formed a singing group of 20 singers called the Garden State Singers. We were funded by the state of New Jersey. It started as a mushroom. It turned into this big thing. I don't want to get into a big story about it, but basically things didn't kind of work out on her end with her life. And so...
So whatever was going on in her life had an impact on what happened to the group.
And me.
And you. Ah, yes, right.
Yeah. So in the interim of that, I was with an opera company in Red Bank. We did full production with orchestra. I did a couple of roles there. I did a lot of private performing back in the day when they actually paid people to sing live and have a live band. We were doing a lot of wedding kind
yeah,
of stuff,
yeah.
Or jazz things, or whatever people wanted. But I found for me what was working a lot better was the solo thing, only because I felt like I could trust myself more than the people that weren't showing up for the gig or,
right.
You know what I mean,
right.
Getting drunk on
right.
the job.
Right.
So what happened was I was going through a divorce and having an epiphany and looking at my life, and my children were still young, and I was mom and dad to them at that point. And I realized that there was a part of my life that I never really addressed, and that was the sexuality part of it. Mm-hmm. So I divorced and I met this man mm-hmm. and realized that that was truly who I was.
Wow. Okay.
So I had an epiphany mm-hmm. at that time. And at the same moment, I was losing my corporate job and I was out of work. And what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Just before I found the teaching job in Atlantic City, and my head was spinning and I was still working a little bit, and I saw another ad. These ads are great, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They were opening a restaurant in Trenton, New Jersey, and the theme was based on a famous New York restaurant where the waiters sing opera.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I went in, I auditioned. I said, yes, I was classically trained, it was an opera singer, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, here's the list of what you could sing, because at that time, that was 1999, they had just come out with these tracks where you have a full orchestra track that you sing to, like a karaoke.
It's Music Minus One.
Yeah, exactly what it was, Music mm-hmm. Minus One. But back in, I'm so old, I remember they were on.
I so do. Oh, I do too.
But tell you exactly what it was. Right. It was Music Minus One. So, but they came out with the CD.
So they gave you, then they said, you can sing these songs in this key.
Yes.
Because that's what it's
so
like.
So I'm looking down the list, and some, you know, I mean, they had a lot of, like, you know, definitely not a tenor.
Right.
But, you know, so Music Minus One in opera is all about the tenor, you know. So yeah, I'm right. looking down, I get to the bottom of the list, and it's Some Enchanted Evening. I'm that I could do. I sang Some Enchanted Evening. By the time I got back, this was my lunch hour break, by the time I got back to the office, they called me. Went in, listen, you know what? Is there anything else you do besides opera? And I'm like, well, I'm doing the Broadway stuff. Okay. If ever I would leave,
right.
That's it. You're the Broadway guy.
Oh, lovely.
So we had four singers. They'd ring the bell. We'd come out, sing our song. When we're done, I go up to the table. What would you like to order? You know, so I had tips in this pocket for singing, tips in that pocket for waiting.
Are you serious?
It was the best job I had ever had.
Wait a minute. Are you serious about the two different pockets?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, how did you know what they were tipping you for?
Well, I mean, it's phenomenal only because people that will go to an opera cafe
are
loving it.
Right,
so
right.
they're going to go with
smiles
yes,
on
their
right,
face.
Right, right.
And
just hand you money.
Right. And then, you know, so we were learning too. Even the owner had no idea what he was doing. So
right.
we were all sort of learning and making the mistakes. And, you know, one night, for some reason, I'm serving the meal, and the person, I said, well, would you like to see the dessert menu now? The way we did it was we would come out with samples.
Right.
And the guy jokingly said, well, when are you going to sing that too? And I thought, yeah. So I started, you know, cheesecake with a bowl. You know, whatever. I just made something
right.
up. Oh, my God. Well, that just then started doing that. One night, oh, it's my daughter's birthday. Sure. Brought all the singers over in our biggest, beltiest voice. We said, happy birthday. Oh, then that was it. Everybody had to make a reservation.
Happy birthday,
you know,
right.
So, oh, you say, oh, thank you. Here's $20.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
You know, so, mm-hmm.
So you're actually getting paid for this.
Yeah, you're getting paid. I mean, basically, I was hired as the waiter. So they weren't they were paying us whatever.
Waiter
fee, and then whatever you would make. But the phenomenal part about it was that they were tipping us constantly for singing.
Right, that's great.
So I decided I'm going to have the two-pocket system.
Yeah, right.
You know, people would come in, they'd give you a $100 bill.
Wow.
It was phenomenal. It only lasted a year. The cafe closed. It was in a very bad area of the city. People didn't want to drive or park there. Mm. It's a shame. So that was fun, and I the reason that I bring that up is because there was that time that I was going through the crises where I didn't sing for a couple of years, and I actually couldn't sing. And I thought, that's it, I'm done. I'll never
You thought you lost it.
Yeah, and I actually did lose it. I wasn't even able to sing. I could speak.
Right.
But the psychological things were just, it messed me up. And then this thing that happened with the Opera Cafe, it was like God tapped me on the shoulder and said, you're not
No, you're a singer, remember?
Yeah, and it was better than ever. I mean, I was 41 at the time.
Wow.
And I was singing, my voice, the register had dropped, you know, I had this voice now like this, and I was singing these things that I never even thought about singing because I was not old enough. You know, I was doing Man of La Mancha, and I was doing things that you have to kind of wait till you're older to do.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of where it happened. I just started thinking, well, let me try these little Music Minus One track things, and I just was at home recording myself singing to the track. What does that sound like?
Right.
And I moved to Brigantine, which is outside of Atlantic City, had met this person.
Right.
We moved together, had to sit down with my children, you know, this is who I am.
Right.
They understood it. They were very good with it. I have two sons. They were 14 and 10 at the time. That was a relief, you know, good.
Yeah,
okay. They get it. Maybe I raised them the right way. In any case, saw the ad for the teaching job in Atlantic City. Got that job. Great. Now I'm making some money. Still want to sing and perform. I was at a party. Guy got up. I started playing on the piano. Go over there. Oh, I can. You want me to sing? You know, Impossible Dream. Somebody flew by. Oh, I want to be your agent. I've never done this before, but I just think you've got it. And I'll say, yeah, okay, whatever. Well, sure enough, she started calling me up, getting these little gigs for me, and one of them was a charity at the Tropicana in Atlantic City, the casino. So I just went down, I did my thing, I just, you know, had the karaoke discs and did all the old school stuff, and I just see these people converging, like they're just running like ants, and the guy's pointing, and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to escort me out of here. I'm the CEO of the Tropicana. We have this place up, we call the top of the Trop. It's a, you know, an atrium type thing with glass all around, and we want you to sing there. I said, well, you know, I'm not a lounge singer. I don't want to sing someplace where people are smoking and blowing cigars.
Right.
No, we want you to do your thing. Okay, well, you know, we have a piano up there, we have a band, we have this and that. Well, it turned out it was actually easier because of what I do to just do the discs
right.
than it was to have a band.
They don't even need the band. Right.
No, and at that time, now we're talking 2000 or 2001, they came out with these decks where you could put the disc in and
right.
get it to sing
right.
in your key.
Ah, yes,
so
I've
now
seen
I
one.
Could
right.
do
right.
any song.
Right, right, right.
In that key. Because people, oh, can you do, you know, Pagliacci? And I'm like,
right, yeah,
in
right.
my next life.
Yeah, right.
But now, of course,
yeah, you just lower the key,
those
right?
Six
right.
steps, and you're
right.
singing. So that's where it all started. Oh. And what happened was someone came in, heard me singing. Listen, I'm a, what's the word that I'm trying to think? Entrepreneur. I just want to sponsor you. I just want, I
Good
I believe in you. And I'm starting a company, and they started this, they produced this CD.
Wow.
Basically how it worked. They negotiated with QVC, all this stuff was happening, you know, and then boom, 9/11, the investors pulled out, whatever, make a long story short. So I was still singing, but...
you got a CD out of it.
I got a CD out of it, and it helped me a lot in promoting myself, and I also did a few more casinos, one-man show.
Why don't you have these out in the lobby?
I don't know. I'm kind of weird that way. Like I said to you earlier, I don't do things for money.
I know that, but
I can't tell you, most of them I've given away.
Yeah,
and I give them only because people like you that have mm-hmm. an interest, that are kind,
right.
that have come up to me afterwards. You know, oh, I really loved what you did, and to me it's like, well, I'm sharing my art with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right. I got it.
You know, which is it's interesting, especially in. I want to say, I don't want to use the word, let me use the word community theater.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't want to say amateurs.
Right.
Community theater is very unique. I always find it fascinating that the director gets paid, that the
yeah,
lighting
right.
guy gets paid.
The musicians get paid.
The painter gets paid. We're doing it for free.
I know.
So, which is okay, because we go into it knowing that.
That's right. It's not like a trick, but still.
But, depending on where you're performing, you're either treated like gold or you're treated like dirt.
Yeah.
Which is odd to me, because you're a volunteer.
That's right.
I'm looking to be ego-stroked.
No, but you should be treated like what you are, which is a professional who's giving his time and his talent.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly, because I'm doing it because I wanted to do it, and I it's, again...
That's not a good reason to take advantage of you.
And the Annie thing just came out of the blue for me. I didn't even audition for it, so it just one day I'm doing Annie. You know, so it kind of just happened. So... It's interesting. Just I have to always be careful though, because it's just there's a lot of people.
This is the other thing is I can't control this stupid phone.
That's okay.
Good. Come on.
Aww, you're good.
Yeah, he's the best little boy in the
world. Really?
Okay. So how did you get to Sarasota?
Well, I always liked warm weather, and. I had this out of the blue early out from teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't like to use the word retirement because for a lot of people, retirement means you're sitting on a dock waiting to die.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And not that I'm a spring chicken, but I don't think I'm old enough yet to be...
You're not done.
Done.
Right.
So I don't tell people I'm retired. I say I finished my career in teaching.
Yes, very
because
nice.
Because now I do other things,
right.
but... It's a lot better and easier because I'm getting a pension.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
And I can pick and choose.
Right.
So I always had an interest in hypnosis. And I noticed in the performing side of it, I used to do things to myself to help me relax.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling it hypnosis because I didn't know what it was at the time. And once I got that early out and realized that I could do something with my life, I went back to school and became certified as a hypnotherapist.
Wow.
So now I help people, but again, because I don't need, I'm not saying I'm rich.
Right.
But because I'd rather help people to help them, I don't care whether they pay me or not.
Right. I understand. If they pay you, that's
if
nice.
If they can.
Right.
Sliding, you know, whatever.
Right, I do.
So that's one of the things that I have an interest in. I started doing it in New Jersey. It's a really fascinating thing to see how people can be helped. And it's an interesting way of helping people because mm-hmm. people are either really open to it or they're just scared.
Right.
They think you're going to go like this and
make them
kill somebody or something, which is not how it works.
Or cluck like a chicken.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. But so I've been doing that, and again, with the performing side of it, I don't really care whether it's a paid job or not. But again, an interesting side to that is how people perceive that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there's this mindset that if you're not getting paid, you're not as good as someone who's getting paid.
Yeah, well, all they have to do is go to see some of the community theater things we have here.
That's what I'm saying.
The talent is extraordinary.
It's really crazy.
Yeah.
It's just a crazy thought. But, I mean, I'm over that now as I've gotten older. I don't really think about it much. I don't really care what they think. But I like the fact that there are people who come and say, wow, that was really, I appreciate that. And they always have a personal story. They'll tell you about where they were at that time in their life when they mm-hmm. heard that song the first
right.
time. Or just to see, people's faces light up and someone will say, well, my mother is, 95 or whatever. Could you come to the house? And say, of course I will. I bring my little thing and I put the thing on and sing the song for them. And that's worth more.
This is the gift that you have to offer. Right. And you
exactly.
Just, right.
It's not, again, it's not about, I don't, they offer me money and I say, no, that's okay. It's fine. It's not.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about a funny thing? Are you in rehearsal yet?
Yes. We started rehearsals. I had this weird thing happen where I was originally cast for the role.
Right.
And then I had some other professional things that kind of started up, but I sort of put them on delay a little bit because the director had a difficulty in filling the role.
Mm-hmm, I'm not surprised.
So he sort of called me up in desperation saying, could you please do it? And I had worked with him before and I liked him and his work. So I thought, I'll do it for him, basically. So that's how I came back to the role again. It's Miles Gloriosus. He's the Roman soldier in the story. The story takes place in ancient Roman times. It's basically just one of these goofball comedy things. And mm-hmm. it's a laugh every second. Mm-hmm. And it's Stephen Sondheim wrote the music. So it was early in his career. It's not the most singable music from Sondheim mm-hmm. or from Broadway. But there is one famous song right in the beginning. Dun, dun, dun,
yeah,
dun, dun,
comedy Tonight.
And it's just nonstop craziness from the minute that the curtain opens till the end. And this character comes in toward the end of the first act, like Annie,
mm-hmm.
and then he's on from there to the end. He's the Roman soldier, but he's this very much in love with himself, sort of over the, every character in the show is over the top, right? So he's supposed to be this, here I am the greatest soldier of all time, and he's looking for a bride, and so the whole story revolves around them trying to, procure a bride for this soldier, And so he does get one great song, Bring Me My Bride, And then it's a comedy of errors, and then by the end, everybody's happy, and they all wind up with what they wanted,
Yay!
Zero Mostel was in the original.
Yeah.
So, tough shoes to fill for anybody.
No kidding.
Those roles. But, it's been fun. It's they extended it another week because it's the last show in that theater.
Oh yes, before they open the new theater. Is that what you right?
Yeah. So it's a fun show. It's a smaller cast. The staging is basically one set, so you don't have to worry about it. Scenery changes, curtains dropping,
and you don't have to worry about costumes either.
Well, we're doing the Roman Roman. So a lot of people are wearing togas. I'm wearing a Roman.
Yeah, but you don't have changes.
No. The only ones that have changes, there's these three characters called the Proteans, and they're like, these poor kids are like constantly, they have to play like 10 different roles, so you'll see them in this class, and they're running,
right,
and they're doing
right,
this kind
right.
of goofy, and you're kind of like, oh, okay, I know who that is, that kind of makes it kind of fun, but I like that kind of a show, again, because it's not so much about the big production aspect of
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
It's all about the characters and the actors.
Yeah.
And the performers, which is, again, going back to what we said earlier, what I like. Because one of my favorite shows that I've ever done was The Fantastics, which was a very simplistic show. It's all about the dialogue, how it's written, the interaction between the characters, and the storyline. And so that makes it magical to me. I don't need to have 1,000 lights blinking and glorious stages. And that's nice, I guess, but I'm not usually impressed by that.
No, you're it's from the beginning where you were becoming a character, mm-hmm. where you were inhabiting a character, that's
right.
still what matters to you.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, and I like to be true to the artistic part of that, whereas I'm not just banging them out because I need to, how many things are on my resume. And I don't really care about that. I've always told my children, whatever it is that you decide that's important to you in your life, the thing that I'm recognizing is that you don't have to remain static either as a person. You can always learn something new or develop into something else or see your life progress in a positive way and continue to learn. I always think sometimes I'm the teacher, sometimes I'm the student. So I'm never not learning. I'm just happy to be able to still do what I love to do and to make people happy. And I get up every day and I realize how lucky I am.
That's a wonderful place to stop. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
I wake up every morning and realize how lucky I am. That is the gift of being who you really are and living the life you were meant to live. And of course, this is the reason that I interview people like Jagar, because you can hear the relief, the pleasure, the joy, the delight, the no second guessing. And this is what I wish for all of you. Now, as I do not have a lot more time, and I want to play the cut from Jagar's album so that you can hear what it is that he does and you can understand why he has such pleasure and joy from doing it and why we have so much pleasure and joy from listening to it. So now I'm going to play a cut from his album, appropriately titled Jagar, and this is Some Enchanted Evening.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room. And somehow you'll know even then, that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room. And night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will keep in your dreams. Who can explain it? Who can tell you why? Fools give you reasons, wise men never try. Some enchanted evening, when you hear her call you, when you hear her call you across a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own. Or all through your life you may be all alone. Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never let her go.
Wow. So is there any wonder that even as a young boy, Jagar Helwig knew that this voice was his ticket, as he said? I mean, really, this is a gift, which he also says. And I imagine that if you had the same reaction to it that I did, that you might want to get a hold of his CD, which you can get by going up on my website, thelinshow.com, remember not to leave the E out of Lin, and requesting it. And then I will put you in touch with Jagar, or I will find out how you can get a CD. I already have mine. So, as always, I am hoping that as you listened to Jagar, as you listened to his certainty so young that who he was who he was, and how despite the obstacles and difficult circumstances that confronted him, he continued to hold on to this certainty that he is a performer, he is a singer, he is a person who uses that extraordinary gift, his voice, to communicate with the world, to make people happy, as he said. And he does. And so, again, if you happen to be anywhere near Sarasota or Bradenton, and you can get to the Manatee Players Theater to see Jagar in A Funny Thing. Not only is he amazingly worth seeing, but the show is adorable, funny, hilarious, charming. And you get to be one of the people who has seen the very last production in the Riverfront Theater before they abandon it for the new space. So, again, as always, I get to thank the remarkable Josh Hackney. I mean, truly, there is nothing, no technological conundrum, problem, question, concern that I have been able to run across, come up against, that Josh has not been able to solve for me. And so if you've got any dilemma with technology, with recording, with engineering, with electronics, with your iPhone, you want Josh Hackney. And he can do quite a lot of this on the telephone, which, as you remember, I do my work on the telephone as a psychotherapist. And Josh can do a lot of it on the telephone as well. So if you don't happen to live near him, that's not a good reason not to use him. And like Jagar and like me and like the podcasts, you can get all of us or information about all of us at my website, thelinshow.com. Okay, as it does not look like I'm going to have an opportunity to play any of the song from A Funny Thing that Jagar does in the show, but go down and see it. That's all I can say. Okay, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that amused you, something that intrigued you, something that inspired you, something that made you laugh, something that made you angry, I don't care, as long as it's something that brings you back. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and I certainly hope you will be.
See, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray, oh, you see my face and figure, I've both seen better days. I won't be retiring, I'll slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No,
I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang, rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix